CNN Radio, I'm Paul Chambers. The beatification of Pope John Paul II was completed in Rome this morning. That means the late pontiff can now be referred to as blessed. CNN's John Allen reports John Paul will be remembered as the pope who took the Bible message worldwide.
Certainly one cornerstone of it is going to be a pope who reawakened the missionary energies of Catholicism. You know, they used to say the pope was a prisoner of the Vatican. He never really left. John Paul, of course, made 104 trips to 129 countries. He was a guy who took the church's act on the road.
John Paul is now on the fast track to sainthood. Was one of Muammar Gaddafi's sons killed in a NATO airstrike on Libya? The Libyan government says yes, he was. CNN's Barbara Starr reports everything is still unconfirmed.
What U.S. officials have said since last night when this news emerged is, first and foremost, they remind everyone this is a NATO operation. The U.S., of course, is probably the most prominent member of NATO, but this is a NATO operation.
Libya may be retaliating. The British Foreign Office is checking into reports that the home of its ambassador to Libya has been destroyed. Severe storms are moving across the south again from Texas to Tennessee. Hail and heavy thunderstorms are reported. The president got quite a few laughs last night at the annual White House Correspondents Association dinner.
President Barack Obama played along with accusations he wasn't born in the United States.
My fellow Americans.
Last week, Hawaii released his long-form birth certificate.
I'm prepared to go a step further. I am releasing my official birth video.
Cue a clip of Disney's The Lion King.
I want to make clear to the Fox News table, that was a joke.
CNN's Andrew Spencer reporting. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
The Home Depot has made a special buy on 1 cubic foot bags of Miracle-Gro garden soil for flowers and vegetables. Right now, buy one, get one free. Plan on bigger plants, brighter colors, and enough savings for a few extra ingredients in your summer salads. We're lowering the cost of breaking new ground with Miracle-Gro garden soil. Buy one, get one free. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Valid through May 1st while supplies last. U.S. only. See store for details.
If you've been looking for Pandora jewelry, look no further. You'll find it at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
That's Jared!
Life has its moments. Make them unforgettable with Pandora charms, rings, and bracelets from Jared. Jared has an outstanding Pandora collection, literally hundreds of items.
It can only be Jared!
Visit Jared April 22nd through May 5th and receive a Pandora jewelry holder with a Pandora purchase of $100. See store for details.
Why should you take krill oil and omega-3 fish oil? Well, if you are concerned about any of the following, you should absolutely be taking both. And if you qualify, we'll even give you a risk-free trial of a pharmaceutical-grade fish oil combined with the super antioxidant power of krill. But first, you have to answer yes to one of the following. Are you concerned about your joint health? What about your memory and focus? Are you concerned about your heart health? Well, if you want to increase your joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days and promote memory, focus, and heart health, we're going to give you a free bottle of Krill Omega-3 Fish Oil. Just call this toll-free number and claim yours. 1-800-900-6118. We guarantee once you try Krill Omega-3, you won't believe the difference. That's why we're going to send you a free bottle just for calling. Call now for your free bottle and start easing sore joints today. Call 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-500-0351 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-500-0351. 1-800-500-0351. Or go to selectquote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, and I'm joined by my co-host, Phil Horeggi of Saber Systems. And we have a great lineup of guests for you today, including Rick Karp, co-owner and director of Unipark, Michael Angelakis, president and CEO of Integration Technologies Group, Larry Rosenfeld, CEO of Sage Communications, and Louis Durechin, CEO, Jackby Corporation. I'd like to introduce you to our first guest, Rick Karp. Rick's the co-owner and director of Unipark. Welcome, Rick. And what is Unipark?
Unipark is a valet parking special event company based out of Silver Spring, serving all of the Washington metropolitan area.
Can you give us an example of some of the special events or locations in which you handle the parking?
Well, we have locations over at the Mellon Auditorium, at the Corcoran Gallery of Art, and various other locations throughout all of Washington metropolitan area.
Okay, and you've been doing this for how long?
I started in the mid-70s, and I'm still doing it today.
And you've been the co-owner and director for how long?
Since 1988, and then I had two partners, Stefano Dubuque and Vic Sharma, joined me in the year 2000.
Okay. How did you become the co-owner and director? Is there a story there?
Well, I started Valet Parking Cars in the mid-70s when I was 16 years old at Congressional Country Club. And after working there, I decided that I wanted to own my own business. And I knew that I wanted to be valet parking.
Okay. So of all the jobs you could have gotten at 16, you chose to park cars. Why is that?
Well, at that time, I was a young man, and I wanted to drive the nicest cars out there. So henceforth, valet parking cars was the nicest cars there was.
So what were some of the nice cars you used to drive?
Well, back in those days, a Cadillac, or we had some of the muscle cars, the GTOs, the old 442s. But basically, I liked old muscle cars.
Okay. Now, this was not nerve-wracking to be driving somebody else's really expensive car, or what was it exciting here?
Well, back in those days, the cars and fixing them was a whole lot different. It wasn't like today. Back in those days, a little scratch was a few hundred dollars. Now, a little scratch could be $20,000 and $30,000.
Okay. Has the parking business changed at all?
Oh, it's changed dramatically. When I first started, there was only one company, and now there's many, many companies out there.
Okay. What do you like best about being in the parking industry, parking business?
Well, what I like best is how I can see the growth of young men to turning into men. We have had many, many people come to Unipark and started off as boys and end up as men because, generally speaking, we're their first job that they have, and we help teach them work ethic and all the components to making a good employee.
Let's dig into that a little bit. So the typical young person or boy who comes to you, this is his first job. What's he like?
Well, he doesn't understand about when they're supposed to be on time, doesn't understand about what's involved in actually working. So we have to train him not only what to and do as far as parking cars, but as well as that, being able to be on time, being able to let us know if they're running late, and all the other components to make a great valet parker.
Rick, you had mentioned Unipark actually has some famous alumni, you know, people who've gone on to do some different things, but they actually had one of their early starts, parking cars at for Unipark.
Yes, Bob Sissel, the vice president of North Face, worked at Unipark. Bobby Cook, who actually married Dora Bush, worked at Unipark, as well as Kevin Plank, worked at Under Armour, worked for Unipark.
So, in other words, you took these people as boys and sort of unprepared for the business world and maybe even for a man's world, and you've turned them into men to some degree?
For a lot of people. There's been various people in the Washington metropolitan areas that are doctors, lawyers, and professionals today that all started their first career job at Unipark.
Why is that so meaningful to you, to be able to turn boys into men?
Well, not only boys to men, from young girls to women. We have both women and men that have worked for us. But it's very satisfying to hear a story of an employee as you're parking cars one day and a gentleman gets out of the car and goes, "Oh, I used to work at Unipark when I was first starting off." And to see them now in a suit and tie and as an executive of business is very satisfying to me.
Rick, you had mentioned that you're a native of Washington, D.C., but it was actually a journey away from the area that that shaped and molded some of your career aspirations. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I had a chance to go out to Los Angeles. And
how old were you at that time?
I was in my mid-20s. I went out to Los Angeles, got a job parking cars at a location on Rodeo Drive, and realized I had potential with the special events division. They shifted me there, so I got a chance to run the Emmy Awards in 1988, the People's Choice Awards in 1988, as well as the Playboy Mansion.
So, could you tell us a little bit about how that maybe brought you back to Washington, D.C.? I mean, that seems like that's a wonderful life, to almost like live your life almost vicariously through some of the Hollywood's richest and most famous. So how did the experience there bring you back to D.C.?
Well, when I was out there working for, as you said, the Hollywood's famous, I realized that that the valet parking was a viable way to make a living, and the owner of Unipark at the time came out and visited me and asked me if I was interested in coming back to the Washington area. I have always wanted to own my own business and always thought I thought outside the box, and I thought this was a perfect opportunity for me to come home and own my own business.
So you said you always wanted to own your own businesses. Does that mean you grew up in a family of entrepreneurs and business owners?
Well, not really. Actually, almost everyone in my family has worked with the government, and I had always realized that I was not necessarily a 9-to-5 person, and I didn't like the idea, basically, of being confined into a building.
How did you know that?
Well, when I was younger, I would always come up with ideas. Early on in my life, I came up with an idea, and my friends laughed at me, of a company called Cooler on Wheels when they first came out with luggage, and henceforth, I thought about the idea, tried to get it going, but we always know that you need money to make money, and we didn't have money for it at that time, so I knew that came up with various other ideas, that always thinking about trying to own my own business, what I could do to open and own my own business.
So you're telling us decades before luggage had wheels and coolers had wheels, you came up with that idea?
Oh, yes. I was down at the July 4th at the mall, and I noticed everyone walking around with these little red wagons. And I realized, well, they just came out with luggage on wheels. Why is there not cooler on wheels?
And you were how old?
Oh, I must have been 18 years old at the time.
Okay, well, let's go back even further. Tell us where you were born and what life was like with a family of government workers.
Well, I was born here in Washington, D.C. at George Washington Hospital. I grew up in the Wheaton area to start off with and then moved to the Potomac area. I basically have always been and lived in Washington metropolitan area.
Rick, you had mentioned, I think you are the youngest of three children. And both your parents, worked in the government, and your older brother and sister also worked in the government. What was the family reaction for you to kind of take this entrepreneurial path?
Well, I think the family always knew that I was a little different than most everyone else in the family, and I was always owning my own business, whether it be picking dandelions when I was 8, or whether it was be selling apples when I was 9. But I've always been a person that owned my own business.
How did you deal with the fact that you were different? You were different from your family. You may have been different from the other children in school. How did you deal with that?
Well, when I was in school, I was dyslexic, and I realized when I was sitting in class and thinking that most of the people always seemed to go and do the same old thing, going working with their parents, and I wanted to open my own business and do my own thing.
Well, what did dyslexic have to do with that?
Well, when you're having dyslexia, they usually put you in a different class, in an English class, than everyone else. So I found myself in that English class sitting there thinking that what they're discussing I already knew, and I felt I was kind of thinking outside the box from everyone there.
So you felt like you could do things despite the maybe lack of support you got from people?
Absolutely. Well, the true support I had was from my family and friends.
Well, tell us about that. You had said something about you getting your work ethic from your father. So tell us a little bit more.
Well, I'd say it would be both my father and my mother both gave me my work ethic, and as well as seeing my family work. Everyone in my family has always worked, and consequently, my father made sure as soon as I was old enough that I always had a job.
In what way did the dyslexia perhaps serve as an advantage to you or a positive influence?
Well, I looked at it as an advantage because it gave. I always thought creatively, whereas most people would think and read. I didn't have that same luxury, so all my learning was done through my ears.
Rick, you had mentioned earlier that when you bought Unipark, it was almost in a turnaround type of situation, and you've made it very successful. When you look 5 years ahead, what kind of a vision do you have for Unipark?
Well, I think there's a combination of people that have helped me along the route. I'd say both my partners have helped over the last 10 years really build Unipark up, because not only now are we doing special events, but we're doing garages and running places like RFK and Union Station, whereas I felt that by myself I couldn't do that alone. And now we are a minority-owned business. We help out anyone and anybody throughout the Washington metropolitan area.
Rick, give us the website or the web address for Unipark.
The website for Unipark is www.uniparkvalet.com.
Okay, I want to make sure everybody gets that, so give it to us one more time.
Again, the website for Unipark is www.uniparkvalet.com.
Thank you very much, Rick. We've been speaking with Rick Karp. Rick is the co-owner and director of Unipark. I'd like to thank my co-host, Phil Horegi of Saber Systems, for helping me structure the interview. And don't forget to visit our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We will be right back in a moment, right after this important business spotlight.
Hi, this is Paul Smith from the Potomac Companies with your business spotlight. And joining us today is...
Jessica Druckmann.
Jessica, and what company are you with?
I'm with Concero.
And Jessica, what is Concero?
Concero is a company that puts together events for senior-level executives. They're intimate, invitation-only, and take place over the course of 2.5 days.
So are these like CEO getaways to Las Vegas kind of things?
Not exactly. We actually say to leave your golf clubs at home. They are serious events. We bring executives together to network with each other, forge new relationships, benchmark, learn new ideas to bring back to their organizations.
Are there specific type of target companies you work with?
We aim for Fortune 1000 companies, the larger organizations for the most part. Most of our events are function driven, so we put events together for general counsel, CFOs, CIOs, for example.
What do you enjoy most about your job?
What I enjoy most about my job is I have the opportunity to speak with and meet some of the most accomplished people. On top of that, when I'm at the events and meeting people and speaking with them and being in a room with executives all at the same level, sharing ideas and learning from each other, it's an amazing experience. And hearing from them that we've brought value to them, both to their organization and to enhance their career, is truly rewarding.
And Jessica, how can someone reach you?
They can reach me at jdruckmann@concero.com. Our website is www.concero.com.
This is Paul with your Business Spotlight. We've been speaking with Jessica from Concero. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion. I'm joined by my co-host, Phil Horegi of Saber Systems. And I'd like to introduce to you our next guest, a gentleman by the name of Larry Rosenfeld, CEO of Sage Communications. Welcome, Larry. And tell us, what is Sage Communications?
Sage Communications is a, in layman's terms, an advertising and public relations agency. To be more complete, it's a marketing, branding, lead generation, and positioning company.
Some of your federal clients would be whom, for instance?
Our federal clients are General Services Administration, Military Health Systems, CMS, Architect of the Capitol, and the VA. Yeah.
And perhaps one striking example of a non-federal client would be whom?
We work with a lot of technology companies and professional services firms like American Systems, Quest Software, and a number of others.
Tell us about DC Jazz Festival.
Well, that's our pet account, our fun account.
Okay.
It lets us be creative. And we have launched DC Jazz Festival, I think it's under the name the Duke Ellington Jazz Festival, about 5 years ago, and we have had great fun doing it, and the events are spectacular.
How big or small is Sage Communications?
Sage has just hit about 45 people. And we are the fastest-growing agency in town because we're very focused in the federal marketplace.
Congratulations. And Sage was founded when?
We were founded, officially in 2004, but I didn't start working until 2005.
Yeah. And this was not your first venture, was it, Larry?
No, I owned a company called Stackig Advertising and Public Relations that was my first job out of college. I was the office boy. I ended up becoming the top sales guy, and then I was really good at what I did, and I ended up buying it from the owner in 1986 with a partner.
And you ran Stackig for how long?
I ran Stackig from 1986 until we sold it to TMP Worldwide in 1997. TMP Worldwide is better known as Monster.com at the time, even though they're separate companies now.
And you stuck around for a few years, or what did you do?
Worked there for 3 years, and then we parted ways, and I went out and did what I always wanted to do.
And that was?
I rode my motorcycle. I rode my bicycles. I traveled a great deal, backpacking for a couple of weeks in Belize, touring the United States. Just had a wonderful time.
I'm imagining it was exciting and adventurous and all of that. Maybe digging a little bit deeper, what did it do for you, having that time away?
Having that time away made me realize how much I missed working. Because, believe it or not, you can get really bored not working. And working has been my life.
When did you realize that you were bored and you needed to get back?
I would say about 2 weeks after I left my company. But
really?
I couldn't work because I had a non-compete contract.
What did it feel like? Was it, you know, waking up in the middle of the night thinking about business, or were you just irritable?
No. I worked 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, and whenever I needed to on the weekends also, okay, at Stackig.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I had no place to go. And you try getting up at, 6 o'clock in the morning and realizing, hey, you don't have anything to do today.
Wow.
So I had to develop a new lifestyle. So I started going to the gym, and I started... but I kept up my networking in the industry.
Now, you had mentioned, when you in your previous gig, the 12-hour work days, the workaholic lifestyle. Is that the type of work-life balance that exists today at Sage?
No, Sage, we started as a totally different concept in some ways. We took a lot of the good practices we had at Stackig, but we added on new ways of doing business. But my partner, who is much younger than I, has a young child. I'm the oldest person there by far. Our company is very young, and people are having children, and we wanted people to come and know that they can build a career with us, and have a good work-life balance. So, no more 12-hour days so much, unless people want to do it. If they want to do it, they can do it.
Was this an easy change for you?
Well, I still like the old days and the old business model. I like the hustle and bustle and the phones ringing off the hook. And you never hear phones ringing anymore because everybody does texting or email. And
I guess my question is, was it an easy change to go from the 12-hour day, Larry, to one that it has a greater work-life balance?
Well, I still work my 12-hour day.
Oh, you do. It's just everyone else doesn't.
My kids are grown. I have grandchildren, But the younger people who grew up, at a different time.
Got it. Okay.
They you see them leaving at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock.
Within the industry, particularly, I guess, in the metropolitan area here, is there a certain kind of worker that would do well at a Sage? Is there a cultural fit that you think, is more conducive to being successful at Sage than another?
Well, we have two kinds of people, really. We have very entrepreneurial people who take ownership to grow their business within our infrastructure. And then you have the other people who want to build careers and do excel at what they do, whether they're artists or designers or writers or interactive specialists, whatever it is, public relations people particularly. And they are they're just incredible. I think this is one of the best teams I've ever worked with in my entire career, 39 years.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your son, Jordan, and the influence he had on the way you now lead a company.
Well, my son was diagnosed with cancer in 1992, and he passed away in 1993 at the National Institutes of Health Clinical Center. And what that did was it put things in a different perspective for me, realizing that, you know, I really didn't spend as much time with my kids as I wished I would have looking back. But and this is why I encourage my staff who have little kids to go home, spend time with your kids. I tell this to my friends who I see working, clients, you know, spend time with your kids. That's the most important thing you can do in your life.
Was that an epiphany immediately upon learning of Jordan's illness, or was it something you came to upon reflection after his passing? Tell us a little bit about that, please.
Well, you know, you never expect to have a child die before you do. And, you know, when he got sick, you know, we did everything we could to save him. And he actually lived longer than we expected to, which was about 15 months. But, you know, I didn't really, when he was sick, we're just too busy dealing with this, with that, taking him in for chemo every day, and it was a difficult time. You don't really think about things like that.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about some of the work that you're doing with the Children's Inn? You know, that has, you know, maybe that came about as a result of your experience with Jordan.
Well, I'm involved in a lot of industry organizations, and one of them is FCEA, and the Bethesda chapter has a gala every year for the Children's Inn, and they've raised, you know, millions of dollars.
Let me interrupt you just for a moment. Can you tell us what FCEA is and then what the Children's Inn is, and then tell us a little bit about how you're involved?
FCEA is the Armed Forces Communications and Electronics Association.
Okay.
Okay, and the Bethesda chapter is very IT-focused, and they pick the Children's Inn as their charity that they wanted to sponsor.
And what is the Children's Inn?
The Children's Inn is a center at the National Institutes of Health that is separate from, it's not government owned. It's an inn where people who are kids who come for treatment can actually stay at the inn with their parents.
Wow.
Okay? So it makes the treatment, and it's very rough getting treated for cancer, or other, not just cancer, but other diseases. And it helps them to deal with it. And they have a family atmosphere there that is just unlike any other place you can imagine.
Yeah. What does that do for you?
Well, you know, the gals that I'm involved with, and I'm just on the committee, and I've been on the committee since the beginning, and this is, I think, coming up on the 13th or 14th one now, has raised millions of dollars to help the inn. And what it does is it buys nights for the parents and the kids to stay at the inn.
Yeah. For just a moment, let's go back to your dad, because I think some of the influences here originated with your dad. Your dad owned a grocery store, is that right?
He owned a little grocery store in Foggy Bottom.
Okay. And you worked there?
I started working there when I was about 11. 5:30 in the morning, get home at 8 o'clock at night.
Wow.
On the weekends.
What was that like?
Never take a vacation, you know. It was just, you have a little grocery store, you can't leave it. You know, you can leave your wife easier than you can leave your grocery store. Anyway, my father was tough. He was a hardworking guy, and he made it tough on me because he didn't want me to go into this that business. And he wanted to make sure that I hated it there.
Did you?
And no, actually, I liked it. I enjoyed working with people. And I watched him and how he did it. And I learned a lot about dealing with people and understanding what people really want.
Yeah. So when you think about working in the grocery store with your dad, and you think about Jordan's life and passing, in what way has that shaped the man you are today? as a business leader and as a business owner?
Well, you know, there's a few things here, okay? Number one, Jordan, understand, and I changed the way my workplace is for my employees, okay? Getting back to my dad for a second, you know, after he retired from those years of drudgery, he ends up getting Parkinson's, okay? And he ends up, you know, being in a wheelchair and then dying. And, you know, I don't want my life to be that way. I want to live a full and robust life. And I want my business life and my personal life to be the same. And it is. It's exciting every day. I can't fall asleep at night sometimes because I'm so excited about going to work the next day.
Wow. Larry,
and this is after 39 years, okay?
Congratulations. Would you give us the website address for Sage Communications, please?
www.aboutsage.com.
One more time, please.
www.aboutsage.com.
Thank you, Larry. We've been speaking with Larry Rosenfeld, CEO of Sage Communications. I'd like to thank my co-host, Phil Horegi of Saber Systems, for helping me structure the interview. Don't forget to check out our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and we'll be right back in a moment after this important business spotlight. I'm Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Tim Keim.
And Tim, you're with whom?
Leadership Greater Washington.
And what is that?
We connect business leaders from business, government, nonprofit, get them collectively working together on issues facing Greater Washington.
Okay. There's a lot of organizations that sound like they do that. How is yours different?
Well, we focus on regional issues, focusing on making sure folks that work together should work together. We really believe in the power of relationships. So I'm kind of a matchmaker of folks who have influence, and we really kind of inspire their collaborative efforts.
So people or companies who would need that sort of help, give us some examples.
Well, anyone from a nonprofit CEO who's kind of siloed needs to connect with other folks, a business leader who has the ability to make change, or a government official needs to know more about what's going on, not just in his or her jurisdiction, but across Greater Washington.
Okay. Can you give us a success story?
Yeah, let me use the Fishing School. Is a nonprofit that helps folks in Northeast Washington focus on boys and girls getting after-school services. They were about ready to go under, but because their leader was in Leadership Greater Washington, got connected with business folks who transformed the organization, came in, did a business plan, did a marketing plan, communications plan, and now the organization has touched thousands more lives as a result.
Tim, what is your web address?
www.lgwdc.org.
We've been speaking with Tim Keim of Leadership Greater Washington. My name is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, and I'm joined by my co-host, David Cooper of Bank of America. And I'd like to introduce you to our next guest, a gentleman by the name of Louis Durechin. Louis is the CEO of a company called Jackby Corporation. Welcome, Louis. And what is Jackby Corporation?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Jackby is an enterprise software company, and we provide real-time intelligence solutions. What that means is we allow decision makers to make better decisions by combining data that before wasn't created to be combined. So there are existing systems being able to take the data from those existing systems, combine it in different ways in order for it to make sense to decision makers.
Okay. You actually explained that very clearly. However, I'm going to ask you for another explanation by virtue of the fact that you have very unique business cards. So tell us about the business cards and draw an analogy.
Sure. Yes. Sure. So our business cards on the back of them have pictures of different things. So one of them is a burrito, one of them is a pizza, the other one is Frankenstein. And the analogy is meant to show exactly what we do. So you take pieces of different things, you combine them in unique ways, and all of a sudden it's this delicious or this very useful component. So if I was to tell you, take water, flour, tomato, and cheese, right, or milk, and put them together, you'd sit there and say, wow, that's, you know, that doesn't make sense, but that's really a pizza, right? It just depends how the ingredients are put together.
Very interesting.
And Louis, what is the genesis of the name Jackby again?
So The company was named Jack B because we allow companies to be nimble and quick. Jack B Nimble, Jack B Quick, with their data and, in essence, create new intelligence. And when we first created the company, trying to come up with names, and my daughter, my eldest daughter, was going to school at that time, and we had been reading Jack B Nimble, Jack B Quick, right? Mother Goose Nursery Rhymes. And when we came up with some of the characteristics of what our software did, nimble and quick, wow, Jack B.
So I'm getting the feeling you are not a stodgy business leader, nor is this a stodgy place to work. How big or small is Jack B?
I'm fortunate to have about 70 people working with us in offices in Mexico City, Fremont, California, and here in D.C. in Chevy Chase.
And Jack B was founded when?
Jack was founded 8 years ago.
And how did you twist their arm to give you a job?
Well, I founded the company, so it's,
well, that was easy.
Yeah, getting a job was easy. Getting people to work for me was the difficult part, but yeah, it was pretty easy.
Okay, you made a pretty shocking statement, at least to me, in the green room about something being easy. Can you make that statement again for our listeners?
My statement was, and I've made it several times before, where people ask, well, how is it that you founded this company? And my statement is, well, I find it easier to write a business plan than to write a resume.
What does that mean?
Well, if you think about what writing a resume is, you're trying to sell an idea, but it's the idea of you, right? You're trying to convince someone that you are right for that job. So you're trying to adequate yourself to a profile that someone has created to convince someone that you can do this. Well, why do that? I find it easier to take an idea and actually expand on the idea, right? Rather than contract what you are to a very simple idea in order to have someone hire you, why not take an idea that's in your mind and just expand it and try to create a business and convince other people that it makes sense?
Lewis, what were you doing before you founded Jack B?
So I had another company. This is my third company. Before this, I had the type of company that usually an entrepreneur has that's going into software, which is selling housewares. Hmm. Yeah.
And how big was that company?
We started 95 with four independent distributors who sold housewares through independent sales network, right? Similar mm-hmm. to, you know, Tupperware or catalog. And 4.5 years later, we had 36,000 people selling housewares.
Well, you must have had to create some enormous efficiencies to make that work.
That's really how I got involved with software. So I was a neophyte in software. I knew nothing of it, right? Mm-hmm. People would say HTML, and my eyes would gloss over and fall, and I'd fall asleep. But reality is, when you have a very large company and you have to deal with so many independent distributors and all their customers, and you're trying to keep efficiencies, or maybe you didn't know what you were doing, you start creating software in order to try to create these efficiencies.
So let's bring this full circle. A moment ago, you said that it was easier to create an idea and expand on that, and now necessity is the mother of invention. You have this fast growth, and you need to create software. How did that lead to Jack B?
So it was during at this other company that we had to deal with 36,000 independent distributors. And I had heard about the internet, so I asked my brother, who was the engineer creating all our software, I asked him if he could create something so that on the web we could basically start selling our software, not our software, products on the web. And he went about creating some of the basis of some of the technology that we use.
Yeah, so this skill of being able to create an idea, expand it so that other people want to buy it, were you doing that as a young child in some sort of a, you know, privileged environment, high-tech environment, or not?
So I'm going to say privileged environment just because I was raised amongst family, right? And anyone who has the opportunity to do that, then you have to consider yourself lucky in a privileged environment. But so my parents, originally from Mexico. I was born in Mexico and grew up in San Diego. And my parents, like immigrants, were forced to get away from their craft. My father was a CPA, a public, you know, accountant, and he became a restaurateur.
Why was he forced to get away from that and move to San Diego?
Long story. Economic debacle in Mexico in 1976, looking for a better life for their family, in essence. You know, the way most immigrants move, just trying to find better place, better security, better everything.
This was the currency family. Devaluation?
This was the first currency devaluation back in 1976.
So you show up in San Diego at what age?
7.
And you were fluent in English, and everything fine, right?
No, not at all.
Tell us about it.
It was the first big challenge, right? Up until that point, I'd been, you know, in privileged, high middle class society, where you're tended to and pampered.
And that looked like what exactly? Did daily life was like what in that environment?
Well, I think it was and still is. Where you have such a great divide between have and have nots, you have a lot of have nots that are willing to work for very little for the, you know, for the have. So, you know, a couple nannies, maybe a driver, you know, things that that people who grow up in developing countries are somewhat used to.
And so when you moved to San Diego at age 7, this was not a lateral move in that regard.
Oh, no. It was a downward move in that regard. Trying to then fight your way up and create an upward mobility move.
How did you do that?
So my parents in a restaurant, and I was fortunate that I had the opportunity to work with them, and I helped out as much as I could, and I learned the ropes of entrepreneurship and just hard work.
What were some of the ropes you learned as a young boy working in the restaurant?
Dedication, tending to the store. You know, that's an important one. And a lot of restaurants, as they grow, they tend to not be very successful. It's because you take your eye off the store, right? As soon as you stop tending the store, then things may go haywire. So it's dedication. It's like anything, right? I mean, any successful person that you'll speak to will say that it's just a matter of focus, dedication, and perseverance.
You said something in the green room which I found very interesting. This is your quote. Helping my parents make ends meet helped me feel complete. What does that mean?
When you're a young kid, 9, 10, 11, right, and you're seeing your parents go off and work 12, 13-hour days, just being able to help and knowing that somehow the effort that you're putting in is either taking off from things that they have to do or helping towards the bottom line is important. I think anyone who works at any company ultimately wants, besides a paycheck, wants to feel important, right? Yeah. Wants to feel that they're contributing not only to the bottom line but to the greater good. And as a 10 or 11-year-old, contributing to my parents' well-being was that bottom line.
Well, in addition to that, weren't you a little entrepreneurial around that time as well?
I was. So when we would cross over to Tijuana, to the Mexican side of the border, I would buy Mexican candy, bring it over to school, and sell it at school in order to make a few bucks.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, what did your parents feel about you at 10 years old being able to contribute to the well-being of the family, and maybe in some ways that they couldn't do themselves?
You know, I think they were thankful, but they never made a big deal of it. I grew up in a family of 5 kids, and all of us did it. I was the middle one, so I had 2 older siblings who were doing it, and even my younger brothers would help in any way that they could.
Okay. The very first time in your life when you realized, wow, I can create an idea, expand it, and build something, when was that?
Wow, I don't know the answer to that. I think that you always have ideas. You always contribute to something. So in the restaurant, I don't know, maybe it was the fact that we took tortillas, fried them, and put sugar on top of them just to, you know, to have a sweet, and all of a sudden that became a dessert that they started selling at the restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't my idea, was it my brother's idea, was it my mom's idea? You don't know, but just seeing the fruits of an idea where you just come up with something is pretty amazing.
What do your mom and dad think of your success today? 3-time business owner, entrepreneur.
So obviously they're very proud. They say they're very proud, but there's a funny story to that. So when I got into the software business, my father had worked for IBM a long time ago before he was a CPA, and I would come back and tell my father, you know, X company has bought our software, and now I got to see this and I got to see the other, and he was never very impressed. Until I remember one day that I got a meeting with someone at IBM headquarters. And when I finally went to IBM headquarters, right, and told him, hey, look who I met with. He said, okay, now you can tell me what your software does. Right?
That's a great story. Yeah. Lewis, tell us what the website address is for Jack B Corporation.
www.jackb.com, and that's J-A-C-K-B-E, like Jack B Nimble, Jack B Quick, jackb.com.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Lewis Durechin, CEO of Jackby Corporation. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Cooper of Bank of America, for helping me structure the interview. Don't forget to check out our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and we'll be right back in a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion of Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. This is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Frank McMillan.
And Frank, who are you with?
A company called PeopleShare.
PeopleShare. Well, what is that?
We're a full-service staffing company.
And what does full-service mean?
Well, we work with people for clerical, admin, light industrial. We're specialized in the legal side, call center staffing.
Given the economy, are people still using staffing companies right now?
Absolutely. We are growing tremendously right now.
So a typical customer for you would be who?
A lawyer's office, any call center, manufacturing facility that is growing or needs to hire some new individuals.
Yeah. Can you give us a success story?
Well, we have a lot of success stories. One of them is just a lot of the people that come into our office just don't interview well, and they just don't have the opportunity to get in to a location. And we give them that first step into the facility. So it kind of gives them a helping hand to get into a premier company, and then they see their work values and ethics, and then they hire them on as a full-time employee.
Why do you feel this is such important work to do?
Well, I really enjoy this because both sides of the customer, the company that I am recruiting for, and the employees that come in, both benefit tremendously from the efforts that I do. So it's very important.
Are there particular types of clients that you look for?
Light industrial and manufacturing are some very important clients, but call center work is very nice too.
Frank, would you give us your website, please?
It is PeopleShareWorks.com. That's www.peopleshareworks.com.
This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion. I'm joined by my co-host, David Cooper of Bank of America. And we'd like to introduce to you our next guest, a gentleman by the name of Michael Angelakis. Michael is the president and CEO of a company called Integration Technologies Group. Welcome, Michael, and tell us, what is Integration Technologies Group?
Hello, Mike. We're a government contractor that also does a lot of work for the private sector. We provide IT service management services, which means that we fix computers, about 200,000 of them throughout the country and the world. We provide consulting services for best practices like ISO and CMMI. And we do systems integration for government agencies, provide computers, ship them, install them, and all the rest of the good stuff.
Can you tell us who some of your government clients are?
Sure. We do a lot of work for the Internal Revenue Service. We hold a 10-year contract with the U.S. Army called the Army Desktop and Mobile Computing Contract. We do a lot of work for U.S. courts, the Department of Justice, Department of Agriculture, pretty much for every single agency we do a little bit.
And how big or small?
We have about, depending on the contract and the time of the year, we have anywhere between 100 to 130 people.
Okay, and you just started this company a couple months ago, right?
Oh, yeah, just just back in February.
February
of 1984. I incorporated the company in 1984. I was the first full-time employee of the company on February 1, 1985, soon to be joined by my partner Giovanni Canobio and a couple of other people that played an important role in the makeup of this company.
But this was not your first business. In fact, you were a business owner as a teenager, were you not?
And a radio celebrity.
Well, at the age of 14, on my way back from school, I used to stop by my cousin's print shop. And one day he suggested that some of the news kiosks in Athens could use the rental contracts that he was printing. So he asked me to go out and find out. And for the next year, I walked pretty much the entire city. And
City of?
Athens, Greece.
Of Athens, Greece, okay.
And populated their news kiosks with our rental contracts.
You were how old?
I was 14, 15.
And you were beating the streets for a year in Athens.
Yeah. Oh, it was a very easy sale. All I had to do was to ask the kiosk owner whether he had any demand for rental contracts. You know, ours were triplicate with a carbon paper and everything. So it was very easy, and the commission was great. So
you're making some good money at 14.
Actually, I did, and I gave it all to my mom, who decided when I needed some of this money back, very wisely.
Now, I'm curious about something. Why did you give your hard-earned money to your mom rather than keeping it or blowing it on something?
The thought never even crossed my mind, to tell you the truth.
Why not?
The time that I was growing up in Athens, Greece, when you're 14 years old, you don't blow your money. You don't even know what it means to blow your money. You know, you need some money to go get a sandwich or to go to the movies. So, I really had no need for it. I just gave it to my mom. I thought that was the right thing to do.
Okay. But that was not your only teenage business.
Well, I didn't really... I continued to work subsequently, but if you refer to my hobby...
Oh, it was hobby, okay.
Which is very similar to what I'm doing right now.
Okay, go ahead and tell us.
Being in front of a microphone. So a number of friends of mine and myself were in the business, not from a perspective of making money, of building unlicensed small radio stations.
Okay, now, what does unlicensed mean?
Well, at the time, they were called pirate.
Okay. And you were how old?
I was 16, 17.
Okay. Tell us more.
And so we would build those stations, and then we would broadcast music and dedications to various friends or girlfriends. It was a means of getting social acceptance among your peers. It was a lot of fun. But I was fascinated with electronics since then. And I was also fascinated by the availability of spare parts, which by and large were made available to the local used parts market by the surplus from the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service at Hellenikon, U.S. Air Force Base at Hellenikon, Athens.
So let me get this straight. At 14, you're a master salesman for a year, walking the streets of Athens, Greece, and at 16, you're a master purchasing agent from the U.S. Navy?
I would say that there's a slight exaggeration there. I was not a master salesman or a master at anything, really, but I did have a great deal of interest, and I was very curious about how things worked, which basically had a lot to do with what I do today.
Tell us about the early days of growing up, and your dad, and what you may have learned from your dad.
Well, I had a very pleasant childhood, with the exception, of course, of the death of my father when I was 13. But I will give you this small example, or an event that really had an effect on in my life since then.
Please do.
At the age of 17, in the summertime, I was supposed to go see a friend of mine who was working at a shoe store in downtown Athens, and following that, we would go to the movies. So I went to the store, and apparently they were taking inventory. The door was closed. An elder gentleman came to the door to let me know that the store was closed, and when I told him that I was there to pick up this friend of mine, he invited me in the store. In the process, he asked me my name, and when I told him, he mentioned the name of my father and asked me if I was related to him.
Yeah.
And I told him that I did. So keep in mind, my father was a leather merchant, a wholesaler, and he owned a tanning factory. So I was not surprised that he knew of my father, but when I told him his name, he invited all of the employees of the store. It was a big store. There were a lot of people there, maybe 15 to 20 people. Put me in the middle, and then went on to say how many, many years earlier, during the German occupation of Athens, my father has saved his life and his wife's life by basically supporting them. Wow. And he went on to say that he was the most honest man he had ever met. And, of course, that was a shocking moment to me. My dad had passed away, you know, 4 or 5 years earlier. But it taught me something in that an individual's legacy is not as transient as his physical appearance on this planet. And it was an incredible lesson for me. Yeah. And I hope that one day somebody will talk like that about me to my children, you know.
Let's give a little more context to your dad. Mm-hmm. Tell us about his health and growing up and what he had to deal with.
Yeah, my father was a very interesting man. He joined World War II as a private, I guess, and later on became a non-commissioned officer. And he had suffered a number of injuries, and as a result, only one of his lungs was operating. So the rest of his life, he had a problem breathing, and he ended up dying of heart failure as a result of lung issues.
You also mentioned he had three bullets in his back. Is
yeah,
that right?
He was wounded in World War I in Asia Minor.
So I'm guessing life was not easy for your father, at least physically.
Well, even though it was, I'm sure that it was not easy. But he was a very classy man. He never really complained. He was very nicely dressed at all times. Had a beautiful smile. And he treated life each day as if it was, you know, the best day of his life. I really have no unpleasant memories of my father or of my mother.
Yeah. You had mentioned that your father is the one that motivates you, even as far back as 17 years old.
Well, my father motivated me from the perspective that he was a very well-liked man. Even while he was in the hospital, where he spent pretty much the last 3 years of his life, there were business people that were coming to see him. He would make deals.
Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnews.com.
He was a good example for me.
Federal
but
News
I would
Radio,
say that my mother as well.
Your source for Federal News now.
Good examples of how to operate and how to deal with people.
If your mom and dad were around today, what would they say to you about your success and your character?
I think that they would be quite pleased, quite frankly. And I think that both of them would look at how I treat people, how I treat my own family, how, you know, I treat our employees, and perhaps even less with respect to whatever financial success I have made.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Michael, would you give us the web address for Integration Technologies Group, please?
I'll give you two of them. One is www.itgonline.com. Describes our company. And www.itilsoftware.net, ITIL software.net, which is our product website.
Fantastic. Thank you. We've been speaking with Michael Angelakis, President and CEO of Integration Technologies Group. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, including Larry Rosenfeld, CEO of Sage Communications, Louis Durechin, CEO of Jackbee Corporation, Rick Karp, co-owner and director of Unipark, and of course, most recently, Michael Angelakis, President and CEO of Integration Technologies Group. I'd also like to thank my co-hosts, Phil Horeggi of Saber Systems and David Cooper of the Bank of America for helping me structure the interviews, hopefully providing you with an interesting and educational experience. More than anything, I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't even have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website at executiveleadersradio.com. That's www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We have been broadcasting from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or